Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. I'm Matthew Darlitz, and I'm here with my managing editor, Richard Hill. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing? Nice to see you again.
Good. Good to see you too. Today, Richard, just by chance, the people that we're going to talk to are in the world of filmmaking, documentary filmmakers. And this is a really good dovetail to last week where we talked about screen composing and some of the stresses involved in screen composing. So we're going to stay in film world and we're going to talk to Rebecca Day from the United Kingdom, who is involved in the mental health of documentary filmmakers. And she's a filmmaker herself, and two from the US, Heidi Reinberg and Marge Safinia, and they are documentary filmmakers as well, and they're all very involved in the D Word, which is a community of documentary professionals, and it's a forum where they get to talk about documentary world. And just recently they've had a big conversation about mental health, and that's exactly what we want to talk to them about.
Sounds fantastic. Three fantastic women, and well, of course all those things will be links will be on the show notes, so check out all that. But let's go talk to these wonderful women.
Well, welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. Guys, we've got people from all over the place today. Heidi, you're from New York area, Brooklyn, is that right?
I am.
We've got Marge from the other side of the US. Hi, Marge.
Hi.
And we've got Rebecca from the UK. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
And of course, Richard from Sydney.
Yes, hello everybody. My gosh, it's like a crowd.
It is.
It's fantastic. Now all these lovely people with so much. I'm really looking forward to getting into this this whole talk. The involvement of the creative arts and the engagement of the creative arts in human experience. You'll all be pleased to know I did a workshop just last year at a big American conference called "Almost Everything I Know in Psychotherapy I Learned in Acting School," and I wasn't kidding. Because there's a lot of humanity in the creative world. So yeah, let's go. Matt, what are we going to talk about?
We are going to talk about mental health in the world of filmmaking, and in particular, documentary filmmaking. But before we jump in, let's just get to know who these wonderful people are. So Rebecca, maybe we can start with you. Just give us a real brief description of who you are and why you're here today.
Sure. So I'm a documentary producer. I've been producing docs for over 10 years and then 10 years now. And then about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I did my psychotherapy training. So I qualified as a person-centered psychotherapist. And during that training, it became very clear to me that I needed to combine my two skill sets and start advocating for more positive mental health in the film industry. So I set up a company called Film in Mind, which is really in the infancy at the moment, but it's sort of taken off in quite a storm of mental health discussion for documentary makers.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so psychotherapist come filmmaker. What a wonderful combination. Marge.
I'm a filmmaker too, guilty as charged, doc filmmaker, but also I've spent a lot of my time what I would call field building, which sounds like a very American kind of term, but I served for a long time the head of the board of the International Documentary Association. I also am one of the co-hosts of the D Word, so personal filmmaker, but also really thinking a lot about the sort of systemic issues around documentary and how to kind of remove obstacles for documentary filmmakers.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, and Heidi, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, it was funny because I was listening to Marge's and Rebecca's introductions and I was like, how would I introduce myself? And I think I'm a garden variety documentary producer in the United States. I live in poverty. We're living in the golden age of documentary right now, but certainly those of us, a lot of us who are doing the work are not benefiting from that. I guess I came out about the subject as a person living in poverty about 5 years ago when I did another podcast because I lost my apartment in New York and I couldn't afford to get another one. So I was bouncing around everywhere. And I guess 6 years later now, like I'm a successful producer. I have standing in the industry, and yet I can't make a living at this.
Right, right. So you're saying that making documentaries isn't a surefire way to become very rich very quickly?
Shockingly.
Quite the opposite. It's a great way to become poor.
Okay. All right. Well, that is going to be one of the key points, I'm sure, that we will talk about when it comes to stressors in this particular industry. Now, you guys just recently on your forum on D-Word, you had a huge response when you started to talk about mental health amongst your peers. So let's just have a little bit of chat about that. And what was the impetus? What was the inspiration to start talking about mental health in documentary world?
So I'll jump in for a sec. So the D Word is this 20-year-old now online global community for documentary filmmakers. You know, we were a social network before Mark Zuckerberg was probably out of high school, and remarkably, it's thrived for all of these years. So it's a space. It's a weird thing we do for a living, and it's quite isolated, and it's a place for people to talk. So from time to time, we do special topics, and earlier this year, I'm trying to think when, maybe earlier in the spring, one of our very long time D-Word members, a very active member of our community, who was beloved by all of us, particularly because sort of some years prior, he had been making his work in Nigeria, and he'd been arrested by the authorities and he'd been jailed in Abuja, and our community came together to help like mount a campaign to get him out of there quickly. So he was very known and very loved. Anyway, he took his own life in the spring of this year, and it was such a sort of shock for all of us, because you think you know, and you don't know the hidden suffering that people have, because we live in this age where everyone's constantly putting out these kind of, you know, stories about what part I'm working on this project, or I just got this grant, or whatever, whatever. So it really kind of precipitated something that we were feeling. Heidi had done a session at a big documentary conference called Getting Real prior. And so that's how we kind of, sorry, not Heidi, Rebecca. That's how we connected with Rebecca. But in terms of the response, we were completely bowled over. I mean, we've been doing this for 20 years. This was, you know, one of the most popular topics that we've ever had. We had a lot of behind the scenes calls before we started with Rebecca to sort of try to figure out, what if nobody says anything, like, how are we going to make sure the conversation happens? And what was remarkable is that one of the very first kind of posts was somebody who came up to speak about her own suicide attempt very honestly and openly. And I think it really kind of set the tone. It opened the door and gave permission for people to share. And then it just sort of really kept going, and we were really bowled over by how brave and vulnerable people were willing to be, Heidi included. I think we sort of unearthed this thing that I think we all knew was there, because we all suffer from it, you know, as we're doing our work, but we're never given spaces to speak about it. And so I think that was really the impetus, came from Andrew Barron's loss, but it helped us see that there's a multitude of people who are suffering.
Yes, it's terribly important. My master's thesis, I did a few of them anyway, but it was on suicide. And one of the literature reviews I did was, you know, who's vulnerable? You know, what are the risk factors? And my conclusion was everyone. And this was quite controversial, but everyone looked at my work, and I just listed thing after thing after thing after thing in all these papers all over the place that were disparate papers. So this is the biggest, after doing that, everyone sort of says exactly as you say, oh, we were surprised how many people, and I'm going, nah, don't be, that's one of their issues. And Rebecca, that where you went and did the studies, and you suddenly, what sort of realization did you come to about the fact that we're silly almost to forget, or, you know, I'm putting words into your mouth. Anyway, what did you feel about this nature of the way we respond to our mental health in every profession, including your one?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it particularly for documentary, it's baffled me that it's taken us so long to have this conversation. So I guess I started thinking about it about 5 years ago, and it was probably from the very beginning of getting into documentary, but on a sort of major level about 5 years ago, because I didn't feel comfortable in, you know, I was starting to get quite a lot of success as a producer as well, and to all sort of intents and purposes, you know, my career was on the rise, but something just felt really, really wrong. I didn't feel like I could be myself, and that was really puzzling to me. And then I was just seeing a lot of people, really amazing, you know, strong, intelligent, brilliant people struggle under the weight of this work, and nobody was talking about it. And so I was having a lot of informal conversations, and I was really nervous. I thought, I'm going to go and get my training and see where it takes me and not say anything to anybody, because I didn't feel like I could at that point. And it was only when I was training as a therapist that I started seeing how we really should be taking a lot of lessons from the training that we undergo as therapists, as, you know, filmmakers should be. Sorry, I say we as a filmmaker and we as a therapist. It's a bit confusing now. But, you know, and so when I started talking about it officially in the industry, I was nervous at first because there is so much stigma around discussing mental health openly. But everybody, I haven't had anybody turn around and say this hasn't affected me. Every single conversation I've had, everybody has responded with, this is needed. We need to talk about this. And so that's kind of been the experience so far.
Yeah, because Heidi, briefly, you talking about your situation. I mean, there you are doing projects, losing where you live. But there's a grit in there that perhaps confuses people. But tell me a bit more. I'd love to hear a bit more about your story too.
Well, I mean, I have to start out by saying thank God that I'm as strong as I am, because I don't know what has kept me going at the lowest of the low points. And I think as a producer, one of the hardest things about being a producer is that you are not allowed to be, you're not allowed to go to your unhappy place. I think directors get to do that because, you know, they're more, I don't know how I would describe it, but we're the ones who are supposed to keep everybody uplifted. Mm-hmm. We're also the ones that are supposed to be raising the money. We're also the ones that are running the money. The project that I'm on right now, I'll give you an example. I was out of state for 7 months working on a film that's got a lot of hype behind it. We've got great partners, names you would recognize. I mean, it's like the dream team. And yet I wasn't being paid. My director wasn't being paid. At some point, we were filming around a school year. At the end of the school year, you know, I had local crew down there and gambled. And I would still, as a producer, I would still make the same decision to gamble that some of these grants were going to come in. You know, $25,000, $15,000, $50,000. But cash flow is the most difficult thing that I think I deal with. So those grants didn't come in. So now I was not the only one not being paid, but my crew was not being paid. And so I was carrying not only my own financial stress, but their financial stress. And I don't like putting anybody, you know, I certainly don't like putting somebody else in that position. But couldn't get any other money in, was trying, you know, moving hook or crook. And it just, again, kept going because these grants, the way the grant cycles are set up now, like one particular grant that I thought was going to come in, I've been told going on 3 months now that they were going to convene a grants panel in 2 or 3 weeks. And that started three months ago. So I didn't know how. I had to get in a car with my dog and drive back from Texas to New York in my overdraft. I didn't eat for 2 weeks before I got on that trip because I didn't want to get, you know, I didn't know when my overdraft was going to stop working. And then every time I, you know, paid for a hotel room or I gassed up the car to the time that I took the final toll back into Brooklyn, because there's no other way to get to Brooklyn without paying a toll, I was worried that my card was going to finally get declined.
Right.
And that's I don't think that's something nobody wants to go through, but that kept on going. And you asked about one of the things that started this whole discussion. It was not long after that, but a friend of mine actually killed himself in large part due to the fact that he could not make a living at this business.
Right. I think one of the things that, first thing I want to say, because Heidi can't say this herself, is that Heidi is a really successful documentary maker, right? She's not some like starting out, doesn't know what she's getting into, has over-leveraged herself. Like Heidi has a name and a reputation. And so hard earned over what, 20 years, Heidi, 25 years, something like that. I mean, so this is an example of a systemic problem, right? This is not to do with the individual. Also, I think that in the United States, perhaps we function a little bit differently than some of the other countries, actually both the UK and Australia, have a base support for the arts from, a governmental support, which is really, like a floor, right, a foundation. And here in the United States, we have many problems. I don't know if you guys have heard, we've got quite a few problems going on over here at the moment. However, we don't have that kind of support. And we also don't have basic social structures to support us, right? So like, we don't have healthcare. That's not a granted, and paying for your healthcare is an astronomical problem, right? And so these things really compound on us working in this very kind of Wild West independent space, which is also very, very competitive. And essentially the system has sort of devolved into I think Heidi said something really profound when we were doing this thing on the D word. So, we talk about career sustainability, but we have a labor problem in this country around documentary, which is an exploitative labor model, which we would actually, it's the kind of labor model that we would make documentaries to expose, right, in other industries, right, which is really problematic. And we've also ended up in this kind of, I've been thinking about this a lot since our topic. One of the things is I'm a multi immigrant, right? I'm from Iran. I grew up in England. Now I live in the United States. So I have sort of different perspectives. But one of the things that I think is really true here and probably everywhere else is that we've lost the middle class, right? In our society as a whole, there's incredibly wealthy people and people who have very, very little. And that middle has become very tenuous. And in our industry, the middle has become very tenuous as well. So if you're like a big name, whatever, maybe you've got Netflix writing you multi-million-dollar checks to go do your thing, right? Or you're like that person that you mentioned earlier, I think it was you, Richard, someone who's just got a subject that they're burning to tell, that's close to their heart, they're just gonna do it. And there's those ones too. But for folks like Heidi or folks like me who have made a career out of this, it's becoming increasingly difficult. And we're just expected to shoulder it, right? We're expected to buck up and do it. And I think that's where the mental health becomes really a critical part of the systemic conversation, right? Right. So I just wanted to say Heidi is not, if Heidi can't make it, then, there's a lot of people who can't make it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. This idea that Heidi's the higher end of the grain. And you're right in saying, I've got a number of friends, documentary makers in Australia. It's very tough. They're always broke. They're always struggling on the things. But exactly as you say, they're not unsafe on a living basis. And this, Rebecca, this is one of the things that you would have learned, this idea of losing your sense of safety, the ground, which is the fundamental element of trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the industry, we've spent a long time talking about health and safety. So, working in keeping yourself physically safe in certain filming situations, but we don't spend any time talking about emotional safety. It's really neglected. And I guess that's a phrase I've been trying to use quite a lot because, filmmakers know how to take care of themselves. They know the things that they can do to bring the stress levels down, to try and fix things, but we can't. It's like there's lack of resources, there's lack of time. There's, I think, so much is attached to the lack of finances, but a really big thing that comes out of it is this really question your value, your place in the industry and your self-worth, and you sort of then get caught in a spiral, and then in the middle of all of that, you're trapped in this filmmaking process that you just do not want to give up because you so passionately believe in it, and you're responsible for somebody's very precious life that you've gone in to film, or many people's very precious lives. So it's very complicated. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult thing to then step away from and say, actually, I need a break from this. I need to go and find some therapy, or I need to, I need to do some self-reflection. I need to go on a retreat. Like, people could, we just can't do that. I mean, it's not just about lack of money. It's lack of confidence and lack of support as well.
All right. One of the things that came up when we were talking to the screen composers, and it's something that I want to bring up here, is about social media and the impression that we get of everybody else in the industry. So we look at social media, we look at the way people present themselves, and it seems like everyone is succeeding except us. And is that something that you perceive in documentary world as well?
Big time. Yeah, absolutely. Hugely so, because there is a bit more of a kind of, we're Hollywood adjacent, right? Like, there's a bit of a perceived razzle dazzle to, directing or filmmaking, which just amps it. So there's, right now I live in LA, and you literally feel choked at this time of year because it's what we call award season, right? Where suddenly it's like nonstop. I'm on this red carpet. Look at me at this fancy party. And it's just, if you're sitting at home and you're waiting to hear about that grant and you're having trouble making your ends meet and some big production problem has come up that you're like tearing your hair out about and you've just got 3 rejections, and then you look at that, you literally feel like, I have no business doing this work. Like, I'm a fraud. Right. It's a lot of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
But that value thing is critical that Rebecca just mentioned. I mean, we live in a world where value is attached to money, right? To compensation and to sort of outward success. I remember many years ago, I was stuck in a feature, and I would sort of fall into bed every night in a heap, just feeling so overwhelmed. And my husband would say, well, I go to work every day, and I, like, he was, at the time he was working in advertising, and he'd say, I have to, like, sell widgets to people, right? Like, so you may not have money, but you are doing something good in the world, and you go to bed at night feeling, full of that. And I think a lot of people say that to us as documentary filmmakers. You're doing something valuable, you're changing the world, and all that is great, but it's, it doesn't pay the rent, and it doesn't make you feel like you have value among your peers. So social media just crazy amplifies all that. And behind it are these very sad, lonely lives, I think, a lot of the time.
Right. I think it's like any, addiction. I feel like a lot of us in this industry are in it because it's so hard. I feel like for a long time, I was addicted to doing things the hard way. Not addicted to that anymore. But I'm a firm believer that, like, the people that I know who are in AA or NA, it's the shame that kills people. Right. And I think we have so much shame about talking about money. Mm-hmm. We'll do deals. We're comfortable talking about money that way, but we won't advocate for ourselves. We're not as passionate about making a living ourselves. I don't know. I think in some ways it's like, oh, that's perceived to be, greedy. I mean, the way productions are often structured, the producers and the directors are the last ones to get paid anyway. But I will say that what's been so interesting to me is, having decided to talk about this when I lost my apartment 6 years ago, I don't think it's a coincidence that my standing in the industry has risen, I feel like, since I've actually been talking about it. Yeah. Something I was, incredibly ashamed of, to the point like where I wasn't going to get into a relationship with anybody because I was so poor and I couldn't make a living and I must be shitty at what I do. I think has actually worked in some odd way to lift me up in the industry.
Right. Shame is a huge issue. everywhere. My daughter's just written a magnificent book, which will come out in America next year, on domestic violence. And shame is a fundamental element, not only in relation to those people who are the victims of the difficulty, and I'm just using the general terms because it applies everywhere, but also the people who are perpetrating the difficulties because of the shame of looking not good and not successful. But Rebecca, I'm hearing just in this context of you shouldn't take money for what you do, you're doing good work, so take the money. Now, of course, you've put one foot in two fields that have exactly that same problem.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think there must be something. It must be like a personality trait, okay? So we're drawn to the things that we do for work. You either do it for money or you do it for love. So what does that say about me? I don't know. But no, you're right. I'm now trying to start a new business. I'm not a fan of that word, but it's a new business, I guess, where I'm providing therapeutic support to filmmakers who don't have any money to pay for the therapeutic support I'm offering. So, yes, I'm still kind of stuck in that situation where I'm not earning very much as a freelancer. But I think one of the things that we talked about on the D-word discussion, and I've been thinking a lot about since, is actually we need to get the funders, the organisations, the institutions to recognise this problem, and they should be providing the cash for that. So, you know, in an ideal situation, I would like to be given a pot of money that I can then distribute. You know, I'm not distributing the money to filmmakers, but I am then able to provide my services to them, and they don't have to pay for it. That would be the ideal solution, but, you know, how and when we get there, it remains to be seen.
But and you've got something set up now that sort of does this function where you've got a...
Well, it's just me at the moment. It's a name I've given. It's a name I've given my services, I guess. So cool. What I'm offering is therapy, one-to-one therapy or consultation on film projects where we need to be thinking about the mental health of either the filmmakers or the people they're filming with. I'm also speaking at film festivals and, you know, whatever comes up, really. So I guess I'm trying to be an advocate for mental health. They're sort of, it's out there. And at the moment, we're doing a lot of talking, and the services, people will hopefully start accessing them. But, you know, it takes time, I guess. I'm also training as well. I'm developing training courses for filmmakers that, again, the institute and the funders really should be paying for.
Yeah, so you've got the title, the synopsis, and the showreel, and now we just need some funding. But films fund for apprentices. They fund. I mean, your best boy is just fundamentally a training thing that they'll do all these. But they hire drivers. Not in documentaries. But so this idea we're talking about with the composers as well, you know, where is that 0.5%
commercial film budget that goes off to the globe,
stuff? And they said, no, well, that 0.5%, that's being divided up amongst 5,000 greedy actors.
And the other thing too is that this is a completely unregulated industry across the globe, isn't it? So
yet, actually, we have the institutions and they have the money, but we haven't yet helped them to see that this is something that they should also fund and grant, you know, and I think that's part of the work we hope will be born out of this. I think there's one other thing that I want to bring up, because I think it's not unique to documentary, but certainly very prevalent for us. The kinds of stories we tell are often we have this very privileged position, right, where we're offered a pathway into someone's life. And often we're telling the stories of their pain, right? And that can range from anything, right? From the small and the personal to kind of global war and, huge societal problems. And so we're entrenched in this work. Not dissimilarly, there's a new show here made by some documentary filmmakers on Showtime. It's just started. It's called Couples Therapy, and it's sort of a a docuseries about couples in therapy with a therapist, and it's shot in a very interesting way that the camera sort of disappears. And as I was watching a couple of episodes, I found myself thinking, God, this therapist, how does she sit there all day and listen to so much like pain from people, right? And then like three quarters of the way through the episode, she goes off to her therapist, which is part of her practice, right? Is that she also gets to go give this pain, talk about this pain with someone else, right? And that just doesn't happen for us. And I think actually there's, Rebecca, you can tell me if this is true or not. I think there are a lot of similarities between doing therapy and making documentary, right? Because you do sort of end up often being that person who's listening, right? And we do it without the training. So the carrying of other people's pain is a really real thing. And in fact, Rebecca wrote this fantastic article a couple of weeks ago after this D Word Forum, and, you know, it was posted around. And someone that is very well known in our industry, a sort of very prolific programmer, someone from the industry side, piped up sharing the article and talked about his depression from having to watch hundreds of hours, right? All these films about the world's trauma, really, like, the, you know, super painful. And it's debilitating, right? You're sitting there on the couch and the pain of the world is flickering across your screen. And you just feel so, like, there's so much dissonance that you feel, right?
Yeah.
And so all of that compounds this kind of artistry, although I think all kinds of artists have a lot of, you know, pain and rejection and value and money and all the things that we talked about. But I think documentarians do that also with this kind of, they're completely unprepared to be, you know, trauma therapists as well, right, in doing the actual work.
I think a lot of times the way most projects get off the ground is you find a story, you get access, and you just hit the ground running. And I think there's this mythology since we went to digital cameras a few years ago that it doesn't cost money. We can just go out there with our camera and spend, you know, 2 years filming something, and that's not the way it works. It costs money. It costs a lot of time. If you're doing it well, it does. Most, you know, and you don't think about, you know, how you're going to pay your rent. You don't think about any of that because you've got to tell this story. And you don't have time for fundraising. And you don't have time to say, well, hey, but maybe I should take a step back. And maybe I should get some therapy. And maybe I should. There's no time for that because it's all about the film. You do that for generally, I mean, some people do it for 10 years, some people do it for 2 years, but it for a very long time, longer time than is healthier. Mm-hmm. You don't stop and catch your breath generally till you're after your festival premiere.
Mm-hmm. You know, as someone who has a foot in both worlds, just leaping back to what Marge was saying, is that the importance for me of having supervision as a therapist, you know, once a month, you have to go in, at least once a month, you have to go and see your supervisor and talk through the stuff that you're struggling with. And it was in those sessions, it was with my supervision support, it's with the support from my fellow therapists, and while I was at university, from my tutors, of just being able to find my confidence. I was able to understand myself better. I was able to value the work that I was doing. And I was able to work through the really difficult stuff and to let out the anger and to let out the pain and, you know, and all the really hard parts that I couldn't share with my clients and I couldn't share with anyone else. And it was always, I was thinking about filmmakers and thinking, filmmakers really need this structure. We really desperately need this. We should see ourselves as exactly as Marge said, holding that same level of pain, you know, often of other people's when we're making our films. So another thing to advocate for, I think.
Yeah. So this is where we're at the moment. It's what we're doing today in this podcast is we're doing a call out. So it doesn't sound like there's anything in place yet. There's discussions, but is there anything? Are there any cracks in the door? Are there any points of possibility? What's going on, Hardy?
I mean, I feel like the dam has burst on this. I think we all recognize it's a systemic problem. But I think the fact that we're talking about it, we're, I mean, one of the key stressors in our industry is that setting up these, you know, vast meetings with people, and then it's like, oh God, another Google Doc, another doodle. And that's incredibly stressful for everybody. So Marge and I had a conversation after the D word. You guys were easy. I had a doodle yesterday that must, I think it had three months worth of dates on it. And I think that's the last thing anybody in our industry, or certainly on the production side, can use right now. But ours is a relationship business. And I have to think, you know, some people are approaching it from data. There's been a effort by the producers organization, the DPA, to get a really scientifically sound survey, which will take a couple of years. But all of our friends, because we all love the industry we're in, all of our friends are also in the industry, a lot of them on the industry side. So I think we're talking about this one-on-one with our friends. We're storytellers. So when I tell a story about, you know, having to drive cross country with my dog and not knowing if my credit card is going to get declined, that I think hits people in a way that numbers don't always hit them.
Mm-hmm.
I am, as Marge said, I think we're languaging it differently. We are talking about it as a labor issue now instead of the sort of sustainability, which I hate the word because you never achieve it. It's a goal, but nobody ever achieves sustainability. Mm-hmm. Somebody in a meeting I was in the other day said they hate it because when their father was on life support, that's what they call it.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Yeah. So,
point. Yeah.
Yeah. So but
the screen is down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The screen is down. Definitely. And also listen, systems are very, very hard to change. However, there have been some sort of phenomenal tipping point moments recently that we can point to. We can point to sort of Me Too as a sort of tipping point moment where there's like a complete, I heard a story on the radio this morning. Well, no, I won't tell you about that because that's complete conjecture. But things that we might not have thought were possible 10 years ago and have changed. When we think about sort of representation, right, like ethnic representation, you know, gender representation, etc., things that were, you know, kids in school today, like, don't blink an eye about folks who are non-binary, you know, gendered, and that wasn't the case at all 5-10 years ago. And in our industry, representation matters now. So if you're doing a project about like an Asian story or whatever, and you don't have any Asian folks on as key creatives, it's a problem. You get called out immediately. You have to like fix it. It's embarrassing. So I often think about really big campaigns. I think we're all probably roughly in the same age zone, although I think young Rebecca here may outlive all of us a little bit. You know, in the 70s, there were seatbelts, right? Or there was smoking. And it was like a behavior change moment, which to some extent was pushed along by some healthy shame, right? Like shaming parents for like riding around with their kids not seatbelted in, you know, shaming smokers for polluting other folks with their secondhand smoke. And to some extent, I think a little bit of well-directed shaming towards the industry, because we are in an ecosystem, and that executive who may be making a couple of $100,000 a year in his or her job has a job because I'm making content and Heidi's making content, right? And we're taking the brunt of the risk. So it's not something that's just my problem or Heidi's problem or Rebecca's problem. It is a systemic problem, and they're part of that system too. So I think that it's not, it would be very nice if some grantors started to get it, but what we really need is to tip it into a shaming moment where the industry takes responsibility for like, yeah, I don't feel comfortable taking my paycheck home when I know that this filmmaker like is struggling to put food on the table this month, because that isn't a functioning ecosystem, right? Yeah. And I think that that's where maybe we'll be successful, because other issues have been successful in, you know, in recent years.
Yeah, and I think what you've got in your favour too is the momentum of a similar tipping points across other creative industries as well, and across other industries full stop. This is a conversation that is happening all over the planet in many different industries. So there is that that momentum going for you as well.
Yes, and I think for those documentary filmmakers out there who look around their work and they see an apocalypse now occurring in front of them, but it may be something simple. I mean, certainly, although film in mind, there we have Rebecca, who's got understanding. There's a place to call, and I'm sure if Rebecca, you start getting lots of calls, that you will then, as you've already said, I'll spread this out to other people. We'll start to find those people. But we need people who understand. This is why therapy, when you're older, becoming a therapist when you're older is so much more beneficial. Because at least when people sit there and, as you see, there's an actor, people come and say, am I crazy? I say, look, I've done Hamlet, don't worry. But same thing for you guys. So that's another shout out from this, I think, Matt. Even though there are others, I'm sure. But film in mind, Rebecca Day is there. Do her stuff. You want to find out the stories. You've got Heidi Reinberg out there. You've got Marge there who can tell you the stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's if that's what we do today, then and we push the words a bit further out into the space. But therapists who are interested in this, who do this, mm-hmm. get in touch mm-hmm. with Rebecca. Make some connection. Build up the possibility and the framework on the other side.
Yeah.
Is that the job we're doing today? I hope so.
Yeah, and I think it's very important because most of our listeners are therapists. For our listeners to have this sort of insight into these industries, and you know, we're dealing with vicarious trauma, with senses of identity, money issues, you know, and having this conversation just puts our therapists in the picture, so that when people in this industry do sit before them, they have a much clearer idea of where you're all coming from. Because, I mean, the perception could be that you're out there, you're a famous filmmaker, you must be doing really well. I mean, it seems inconceivable that you'd be on the poverty line, but yet that's the reality of the industry. Surely someone somewhere is making the money, if it is truly the golden age of, you know, documentary filmmaking.
Well, yeah, and it's also a bit of a 1% problem. In fact, I think that...
Right.
This golden age has exacerbated the whole situation, right? Because the gap now is so much more clear. You know, 20 years ago, it was like being a public servant during documentary. It was like being a teacher or something, right? It was that kind of a profession. But now there's folks who get razzle-dazzled and on the red carpet and get these big multi-million dollar deals announced. And it has created a perception that we're all doing fine. And the flip side of that perception is a growing chasm of feeling like I'm not doing fine and I'm a fraud, you know?
Right. So
the middle's fallen out of the documentary market too. I mean, there's either the high, you know, the highly budgeted projects, or there's the public television projects, and there's nothing in the middle there.
Right. Yeah.
We've covered such a lovely lot of ground, and from Matt and my point of view, we've introduced three really interesting people into our space, and a really interesting understanding. And you know, if exactly as you're saying, Matt, if you've got people coming in the film industry, there's a Rebecca Day out there with film in mind who can give you some insight and training. And there are also these other people who are in the space and the D word as a social networking arena. Connect, because it is the isolation and the psychological ache and the burdensomeness that drive us to points of extremely dramatic and, as we've heard, sometimes fatal action. And we got to stop this.
Yeah, and now that the door has been open and the people on the D Word Forum have found it safe to actually talk about this topic of mental health, then keep talking, keep the conversation going.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're so grateful you had us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. And we will point everybody to you guys and to your resources in the show notes. It's been great having you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Bye for now. Another fascinating session, Matt. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like the documentary film industry is as advanced or as developing in this as the music industry, but regardless of that, we've just got to understand the humanity and that is occurring in all kinds of different professions and the individual quirks. We need to know stuff, and good on Rebecca for bringing those two things together. So follow these guys up. Yeah. Look at what's going. Yeah. Look at your clients when they're coming in. What are they on? What are their interests? What are their professions? What are the peculiarities of their profession that add to their mental stresses? A lot of lessons in this one. I really appreciated it. Thanks, Matt. That was great to pull this together.
That's right, Richard. The same sort of issues we talked about last week, vicarious trauma, identity issues, money issues. You know, these are all really big stressors, not to mention a lot of the technical stresses of making a film, which we didn't really get to talk about. But there's these other big ticket items, which as therapists, you know, we encounter all the time across all different industries with all sorts of people. So worthwhile conversation.
Yeah, check out all their stuff in the show notes. And I guess that's us for now.
It is. Thanks, Richard. We'll catch you next week.
Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.